Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Be'a Daf Chof Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins the second line from the top of Daf Chof Hei. Before we begin the shiur, let us just briefly mention that we are continuing with the topic we started in our previous shiur, regarding trapped animals, animals that were entrapped before Yom Tov. So you can take them, of course, and shech them and use them for your Yom Tov consumption. However, animals that were trapped on Yom Tov proper, we speak about animals, we include fish, so they are forbidden. They were not prepared, they were not mukhan from before Yom Tov, and we've learned extensively that items that you use on Yom Tov have to have been prepared or have been available for Yom Tov use from before Yom Tov. And since trapping and fishing on Yom Tov is a forbidden activity, animals that were free upon the entrance of Yom Tov, and only on Yom Tov proper were they entrapped, so they are not allowed. Omar Rabo Barav Huna Omar Rav. Hasocher. Socher is to dam up a flow of water, a river, a stream. Hasocher Amas Hamayim Me'erev Yom Tov. A person had dammed up a stream of water from Erev Yom Tov. Ulamocher Hishkim Umotza Bo Dogim. And then he found in the section that was on the other side, on his side of the dam, in other words, there was no flow of water taking place on this side of the dam, and he found there fish, mutarim. So those fish are mutar. They came into your property, they came into your area from before Yom Tov. Omar Rav Chista. Now we have to note on the side our topic heading, Hazmonas Balei Chaim. We're dealing with the idea of preparing animals, fish, from before Yom Tov. The double underline highlights the names Rav Chista, and you'll see Rabo Bar Rav Huna. Those names are highlighted as we go on in the Gemara. Omar Rav Chista, Idivrei Rabbeinu Nilmod, from Rav's teaching. Rabbeinu is our master, our teacher. We will learn. Chayo shikonena bepardes. An animal that, konena literally is nested, but it set up home, that it set up its home, its dwelling in an orchard. In a grove, a tree grove, where fruit trees grow, pardes. Eino tsricha Zimon. It doesn't need any further preparation for your Yom Tov use. The Rashi across from here says, "Bepardes mokom hamishtamer." It's a place that's guarded. V'ein havlad yotze sheino yochol evroach. The offspring in the case of a chaya that gives birth to an animal. Shikonino indicates it set up its nesting or its home there, and it had a child. The Vlad cannot get out of there. Sheno yochol devroch v'kal lo tsudo, and it's easy to trap it. V'eino tsorach zimun. The ha'ocha b'nei shehi stuma, here in the case of the fish and the stream that was sealed up. V'ein yucholim lotzeis kori luhu muchanim. And since the stream was dammed up, so they can't go anywhere. They're considered prepared. Ulekame porach the zimun gadol who zeh shoyse maisa l'shem azmona. Later, the Gemara will ask, how do you compare the case of chaya shikonen of a pardes to the case of our of someone damming up a stream? So Rav Chisda felt that he can conclude from Rav's teaching of one who dammed up a stream whereby the water flow that's in his property is no longer coming from outside, and the water is not, it's obviously it's not flowing further on because he's keeping the water in his property. So the fish that one finds in there are mutter. So from that, Rav Chisda concluded the animal that shekonen of a pardes that set up shop in it in his orchard. So the animal, the vlad, Rashi speaks about the vlad, the offspring, the thing that the animal that's born there is allowed. Now, a long question appears. Within the long question, there's also a bracketed section that we'll skip initially. Omar Rav Nachman, Nofal Chavrin B'Rav Ravosa. Our colleague, namely Rav Chisda, has entered an area of great machlokas. Rav Ravosa is an area of controversy. In the brackets, so there's an issue of names, different names. We'll get to that later. How can Rav Chisda conclude from Rav's teaching that which he concluded, namely the Chaya Shikonu B'Pardes Seinu Tzricho Zimun? Hosam Lo Ka'ovid Maisa. In the case, we skipped the brackets, I hope everyone sees that. There, in the case of the Chaya that set up, that made its nesting in the orchard. When we say nesting, we're talking about animals like deer and other wild animals that set up their home in the pardes. Lo ka'ovid maisa, the owner, the one who's taking the animal, he didn't do any action. The animal itself set up its own home there in the pardes. Hacha, in the case of the fish and the stream, that which Rav spoke about, Ka'ovid Maisa, the owner, did a major act of preparation by damming up the water Erev Yontov. He is showing us with a significant action that he is designating whatever fish that are on the other side of the dam where there's no more water flowing into his property that he wants to draw from those fish. So how can Rav Chisda issue his ruling based on Rav's teaching? Furthermore, v'lo baya zimun, is zimun not required? Not zimun is an act of preparation. V'hatanya, we have the following source addressing exactly the case that Rav Chisda spoke about, and you'll see in this Tanaic source to the contrary of Rav Chisda's ruling. Chaya shekinenu b'pardes tzricha lezamein, and we dashed underline, that's the focus of our attention. The animal that set up its home in the pardes does need to be prepared. One does have to designate his interest in using it. V'tzipor dror tzorach likshor b'knafel kidei shelo tischalef b'imo. A wild bird, a tzipor dror, a free wild bird that a person designated from before Yom Tov that he wants to use, in order to designate it properly, he has to tie its wings so that he doesn't confuse it with its mother. V'zu edus she'idu mipi shmaya ve'avtalyon. And this is testimony that was said over in the name of the great Tanoim, Shmaya and Avtalyon. Tiufta. So this represents a challenge, a refutation of Rav Chisda. We had a bracketed section. Let's go over that now. In the brackets, the only difference is an issue of names. Iko Diamri. Another version. Omar Rabo Bar Ravuna. Instead of Rav Chisda being the speaker, Rabo Ravuna speaks. Midivrei Rabbeinu Nilmod, from the teachings of our master, we can conclude, we can learn. Chaya Shikinu Bepardes Eino Tzricho Zimun. Omar Rav Nachman. Now, Rav Nachman is the same as we saw before, four lines above. Rav Nachman responds. He says, Nofal Bar Chavrin Berav Ravosa. In the first version, Rav Nachman was referring to Rav Chista, and there he referred to him as our colleague, because Rav Nachman and Rav Chista, they were colleagues. With regard to Rabbo Barav Huna, Rav Nachman and Rav Huna, the father of Rabbo, Rav Nachman and Rav Huna were colleagues. So Rav Nachman, in referring to his colleague's son, he says, Bar Chavrin, the son of our colleague, entered into a point of controversy by his ruling that the Chaya Shekinah B'Pardes doesn't need Hazmona, doesn't need Zimun, so he is saying something that is very controversial, something that people will object to. So far, in our Gemara, after the long question, we ended with a tufta, a refutation of Rav Chista, namely, that you have to say, not like Rav Chista, but rather, the Chaya Shekinah B'Pardes does require some formal act of preparation, of designation, and you cannot just go to the Pardes and take the Vlad of the Chaya on Yom Tov without prior Zimun preparation. We have a marking that we saw already, a triangle that we didn't explain, but on the side of the Gemara, the triangle appears in two directions. Kushios l'shnei kivunim hafuchim, I chaya shekinah b'pardes boi zimun. So far, the triangle we saw already indicates in the direction of the chaya requiring zimun. Here, we ask in the opposite direction. Umi bayo zimun, does the chaya shekinah b'pardes Ni zimun v'atanya. We have a Tanaic source, and by the way, use your markings before we get into all the details. Notice the dashed underlining that you see a few lines later. There we've highlighted Chaya Shekinah B'Pardes Mutarin v'Ein Tzrichin Zimun. So this shows to the contrary. Actually, it would seem to support Rav Chista. So we ask, is it so that they require formal preparation, v'atanya? We have the following Tanaic source. Omer Rav Shimon ben Elazar, Moidim Beishamay Beis Hillel. Beishamay Hillel concur. Al Shehizminon Pesocha Kain Umotza Lufnei HaKain Shasurun. If a person prepared birds inside a coop and found them in front of the coop, that they are forbidden. Bamed Dvorim Amurim. Under what circumstance do we say that we require zimun, require preparation. V'yoynei shevach, v'yoynei aliyah, v'tziporim shekinu b'tfichim u'bebira. This is true with regard to these kind of birds, different kinds of doves, the coop dwelling doves, attic doves, birds that make their nests in tfichin and in the bira. Avol avozim v'tarnegolim v'yoynei hardasios, geese and chickens and Herodian doves, the chayo shekinin of apartes mutorin v'ein tzrichin zimun. These are mutter, they don't require any special preparation. They are all considered available and ready for Yom Tov use. As far as entrapment is concerned, they're all considered entrapped, easily accessible, and not. And your taking them wouldn't be robbing them of their freedom. V'tzipor dror tzricho l'kashi b'chnofel k'dei shelo tizchalef b'imo. A tzipor dror, the small, flittering, wild-type bird, you would have to tie its wings in order to serve as a proper preparation so as to not confuse it with its mother, which would be the same size as the bird you want. V'amukushorin v'hamenu anain b'boros u'b'botim v'vishichim b'oros mutorin. Birds that were tied and menunoim is the one picked them up, he shook them as his zimun, as his form of designating them, and he recognizes which ones they are, and they're found in pits or in houses, in other ditches and caves. They are mutar on Yom Tov. You did a proper preparation. Ovilanos asurim shemi avitlosh. If you prepared the birds, but you left them in a tree, so they're usur because you cannot climb the tree to get to them. There's a gezeira derabbanan in not climbing trees. Vamukushorin vamenuonin bechomokom asurin mishum gezel. This halacha is not a Yom Tov halacha, but rather, if one finds birds that are tied together and designated for use anywhere, even during the weekday, you cannot take them because of gezel. Someone else prepared them. Someone else had done this tying together or the shaking of them and was kone it, acquired it from hefker, from their original, from their previous wild state. The main point for us is there were quite a few details in the source, but all we have to focus on is the source teaching us the cheshken v'pardes mutorin v'ein tzrichen zimun. This runs counter to what we said before, that the chaya shekinenu v'pardes does require special designation. Omar Rav Nachman lo kashya. So stage one of Rav Nachman's answers says there is no contradiction. Ha ba ha be'ima. One is referring to the offspring, the Vlad. That doesn't need Zimun. It's young. It can't run away. And his mind was on it. The mother, which is large, that would require Zimun. The Gemara asks, ima bezimun sagila. What, the mother, the adult animal, the mother animal, is it enough just to have mere designation? Tseido malyusabaya. She, in order for the mother animal to be allowed, it would require a formal trapping. You'd have to trap it. You can't just designate it. How would designation help if you have to, on Yom Tov, go ahead and trap it? Elo Omar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok. Idi v'idi b'dida. Both sources are referring to the offspring. Ha begino hasmucha le'ir. Ha begino she'ino smucha le'ir. If the grove is near town, so you don't need to have formal zimun. Your mind is on it simply because of the proximity of the gina to town. However, the source number one that said Chayos Shekinenu v'Pardes Tzricha L'Zamein, that's Begino She'eino Smucho Le'ir. It's not near town, so you didn't know about it for your mind to be on it to begin with. The Mishnah. Before we learn the Mishnah, we'll notice on the side we have a Nosei Mivne heading. We have a topic heading with a structural note. In this Mishnah we use a trapezoid, a volcano shape, to highlight the expressions tzli, something roasted, and the word chai, raw. And we continue in our note, Shchitas Misukenes Biyomtov. Misukenes is an animal that is deathly ill. You have an animal that's still alive. It's about to drop dead. If it drops dead, so it has no use. It's nevela. At best, you can use it for dog food. If you slaughter it before it drops dead, so you've slaughtered a living animal. Proper slaughtering, it's kosher, and you can eat it. What about this story taking place on Yom Tov? Ukvar ochal sudas Yom Tov. And let's talk about someone who finished eating his Yom Tov meals. Up till now, we know that if you slaughter for your Yom Tov meal, that's perfectly all right. Here we're talking about someone that's going to be slaughtering, but he's already finished his Yom Tov meal, so he's basically slaughtering for after Yom Tov. He's slaughtering on Yom Tov for after Yom Tov. That's not something that would be allowed. Machloikis Tanakam Rabbi Kiva, Mahim hatnoyim leafsher shchitasa. We're going to see a machlokas between Tanakh and Rabbi Kiva. What are the conditions under which we can allow slaughtering the mesukenes? Now the Mishnah. Behema mesukenes lo yishchot elim ken yesheus b'yoyim lechol mimeno kezayis tzli. One who has this type of sickly animal, and he's afraid it might die, and he doesn't need the slaughtering for Yom Tov per se, because he's already eaten. So we say that he is allowed to slaughter it, provided there's enough time left in the day, on Yom Tov day, for him to take an olive quantity of the meat and roast it. So if there is enough time in the day for that to take place, so it's considered a Yom Tov worthy shechita. Rabbi Kiva Omer Afilu Kezayis Chai Mibeis Tevichasa. Rabbi Kiva is even more lenient. He says, even if there's enough time in day just to eat a piece of raw meat, a kezayis is an olive quantity of raw meat, Mibeis Tevichasa. This is an expression that we'll have to explain later. Whatever the case is, it's an amount of time that doesn't entail roasting as well. Shachta basode lo yiviena b'moit uvemoito. If one slaughtered the animal out in the fields, one should not bring it in on poles. Bringing an animal in on poles involves two people carrying the animal, carrying the carcass on poles. That looks too weekday-ish. The expression that you see is it's afsha milsa. It makes too much noise. It doesn't look Yom Tov dik. It's called a zilzel to Yom Tov. It's the way people carry things to market, and that's not appropriate for Yom Tov. Avol, maybe biyodo evarim evarim. However, what he can do is he can bring the animal in limb by limb from the field to his house. A crown shape appears. On the side, we have a mivne, a structural note. We indicate memros shel romi bar abo. We have comments that he makes, one over here, and on Omid Beis, we will see the upper part of the page, another comment of his. Under the Nosei, the topic heading, we've written, Lechol Bosor Chulin Rak Achar Hefshit V'Nituach. Hefshit V'Nituach. Hefshit means skinning. Nituach is dismembering. Dismembering an animal into its limbs. The term Hefshit V'Nituach is used often in the context of a korban oilon, an ola offering, an ola sacrifice that is burnt completely as opposed to any part of it being eaten. The animal in an ola is first skinned. The skin is given to the kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash, and the animal is then dismembered and the limbs are put on the fire of the Mizbeach. That's Hefshit v'nituach in its original context. What the Gemara describes here is doing that, hefshit v'nituach, even for common meat that you eat. A double underline will appear as the Gemara continues, and on the side, under the Mivneh heading, we explain, these are shlovim levarer, my komashon Rami Bar Abba. We're going to try to understand in stages what does Rami Bar Abba come to teach us. Now the Gemara. Omar Rami Bar Abba. Hefshit v'nituach b'oila. Vodin l'katzavim. As we explained earlier, hefshit, skinning, nituach, dismembering into limbs, is something we do by a korban ola, but it's something butchers do as well, even with chulin. Mikan limdo Torah derech eretz. From here, the Torah teaches us proper behavior. Shelo yochal odom bosar kodem hefshet v'nituach. A person should not eat meat before it's skinned and dismembered. So that Rami Bar Abba is telling me the Torah, in teaching the dinim of a korban olah, has a message in it for all of us, even if we're not dealing with a korban olah, but for meat eating in general. My komashmalon. The Gemara is asking, what is Rami Bar Abba telling us? Is he telling us simply an issue of what we call good manners, derech eretz? Or is he telling us something that has to do with what we call iser veheter? That if you don't do this, you will be an actual violation of letter of the law. Good manners, in all due respect, as important as good manners and proper etiquette is concerned, one who deviates from that is not in violation of what we call letter of the law. So that is the question the Gemara is asking. What is the point behind Rami Bar Abba's teaching? Is he teaching me a point of Derech Eretz, or is he teaching me letter of the law? And that will become clear as we go on in the Gemara. By way of introduction, let's take a look at Rashi, my komashim, on the fourth wide line under the Gemara text. Derech Eretz oy iser. Is he telling me proper behavior, proper etiquette, or actual letter of the law prohibition? Ulemeimar, and to tell me, if you're telling me iser, you've been telling me de osir lechol mimeno, you cannot eat at all. You cannot eat from meat. Ad shiyinascho, until you dismember it, until you cut the animal apart into its limbs and check it thoroughly. Shemo yimso lo simen shreifa beseser. You might find, by dismembering it and inspecting the limbs, he might find a sign of it being trefa. Trefa, in loose terms, is something that's unkosher, but it would be an organ defect that would render it a trefa. V'hichzik lanu habehemus b'sofik trefas af koidem shira behem trefas. According to Rami Bar Abba, he would be categorizing animals after they've been slaughtered, even before you discover a sign of trefus, he, in his teaching, would be saying that the animal is forbidden. It's considered, let's say, becheskas iser. It has the status of being usser until you actually dismember it and look at the various limbs. So that according to this approach called the Isser approach, Rami Bar Abba is in effect saying that by the mere fact that an animal was properly slaughtered, it's still usser to eat until you go a step further, checking out the limbs. There is another approach, by the way, and that the Gemara will point out in the name of Rav Huna. And his approach is that an animal, when it's alive, is usser because it's called aver min achai. That which is living is strictly prohibited. You can't rip off a limb from a living animal and roast it. However, once a proper slaughtering was done to an animal, according to Rav Huna, at that point the animal is considered having a status of permissibility. Notice, Rami Bar Abba, according to the suggested approach, is no. The mere proper slaughtering is not enough to have the animal considered permitted. According to Rav Huna, the animal's restriction is only while it's alive. But once it's properly slaughtered, at that point, at that moment, it's considered mutter until you find an actual problem. According to Rami Bar Abba, even if you didn't find an actual problem, it's considered prohibited until you inspect it. Again, that's a suggested approach to Rami Bar Abba. Let's see if that's what we'll stick with, though. So the Gemara continues. We read, my komashman, six lines from the bottom. What is Rami Bar Abba's point? E lema, notice we have a long question here. E lema lafuke midrav huna. If you think that Rami Baba is coming to exclude Rav Huna, to teach Isser, where Rav Huna would be lenient, Rami is coming to be strict. Well, what did Rav Huna say? Diyama Rav Huna, behemo b'chayel b'cheskas Isser Amedes. An animal, b'chayel, when it's alive, b'cheskas means it has the status of being usser. It's called the Isser Eiver Menachai, the prohibition of eating from an animal that's still alive. So it's behemo b'chaya b'cheskas iser oimedes ad shivoda loch b'amen ishchato. It remains usser until you know how it was shechted. In other words, until you know if a proper shechita was done. Nishchato, once it was shechted properly, b'cheskas heter oimedes. The animal assumes the status of permissibility. Ad shivoda loch b'amen ishchato, until you discover how it became a trefa, if it in fact became a trefa. But until you check anything out, it is mutter. The Rashi points out the nafgamina between these two approaches would be that if a situation of definite proper shechita took place, and you have a doubt concerning the issue of treifus. So according to Rav Huna, it would be allowed. If we look in the Rashi, he spells this out four lines from the bottom. Lafukim Rav Huna, diyomar beim b'chaya b'cheskas iser eiver mena chayo medes, that as long as the animal is alive, it's considered prohibited as an eiver mena chay. V'nafka mina, the point of difference in knowing this is shim ira sofik b'shchitasa, if a doubt concerning the validity of the shchita arose, namideno al cheskasa v'asura shivorach b'boro shenishchat karoi. If you have a doubt concerning the effectiveness of the shchita, so the animal will retain its previous status of prohibition. U'mishanishchat karoi, however, once it was properly slaughtered, harei b'cheskas heter. It assumes the status of permission. The stam behemos ain't on trefos. Your average animal here is not a trefa. Vim nimtza bo nekev borea o bivnei mayim v'yesh litloso l'achar shchita l'achshir v'kodim shchita l'esor. If you discover a hole in its lung or its intestines, and the hole might have taken place after the slaughtering, or possibly before the slaughtering. Hamiden aches koso shoisabo kodim shnimsabo sofikze. The animal, because of its previous status, and now you have doubt, you assume the animal to have and to enjoy its previous status, namely its status right after the shechita. Umuteres ad shivodaloch emes shitreif, until you find out that it was definitely a problem from before its slaughtering, and it would be a definite trefa. So now we go back to the Gemara, and we're asking, is Rami Bar Abba's point to be stringent beyond Rav Huna? Rav Huna having said that once the animal is shechted, it assumes the status of heter. And Rami Bar Abba is saying no, that even though it was shechted, it remains usur until you check out its limbs. But we have our Mishnah, we're reading in the Gemara three lines from the bottom. We have in our Mishnah a teaching that is like Rav Huna. So Rami Bar Abba isn't going as an Amora. He's not going to say something counter to the Mishnah. Disnan, Rabbi Kiva Oimer, Afilu Kezayas Chai Mi Beis Tavichosa. Rabbi Akiva says that you can shecht the Misukenes as long as there's enough time to eat some raw meat from Beis Tavichosa. My love, Mi Beis Tavichosa Mamish. Does this not mean from the part of the animal where it was slaughtered, meaning from its neck? That would mean that you have an animal that's sickly, and it's Yom Tov, and you finished eating your Yom Tov meal, and there are a few minutes left in the day, enough time to slice to slice into the animal's neck, cutting the trachea and the esophagus, the two simonim that are necessary for shechita, and then as your knife is right there, you cut out of the neck base tevichosa. Tevichosa means usually means slaughtering. Base tevichosa means from its neck, right where you are. You scoop out an olive quantity of meat and pop it in your mouth. If you have enough time to do that before Yom Tov ends, you can shecht it on Yom Tov. Tell me, did you check out its limbs? Did you check out its organs? No. Does that matter? No. You can. That's enough. As long as you shechted it, you can eat it just like that. That shows like Rav Huna. Loi. That's not the pshat. That's not the explanation. Rather, when the mission, when Rabbi Kiva says mi beis tevichosa, it means mi mokoim shetoivachas achilosa. Before translating, it simply means from its stomach, from its intestines, from its organs of digestion. Tovachas achilosa is where the animal grinds up its food in its digestion, where it digests its food. So that would indicate that you can't eat meat immediately upon its being slaughtered, but you have to open it up and see its inner organs, and only then, once you establish that it's not a trefa, then and only then you can eat. That would support, then that would support Rami Bar Abba in this particular approach. The Gemara asks, "Vaha Toni Rabbi Chia Mokom Tevichosa Mamish," but Rabbi Chia has in his Tanaic source that Rabbi Akiva speaks about eating from its neck without opening up the animal, supporting Rav Huna. Now, Rami Bar Abba isn't going to teach something against this Tanaic source. So when Rami Bar Abba said, "Hefshit v'nituach v'adin l'katzavim," he was telling me a point of proper behavior, of derech eretz. Elo Rami Bar Abba, we continue at the top of Amid Beis, Oirach Aro Komashmalon. He is telling us proper behavior. Nothing to do with an Isser Trefus. Granted, if a person slaughters an animal and is very hungry and wants to slice some meat out of its neck before opening it up and looking at its inner and its organs, he can do so because the animal has a cheskas heter once it was properly slaughtered. So what's Rami Baraba's point? Rami Baraba's point is basically saying, in all due respect to your being hungry, take it easy. Take it easy. First, after you slaughter the animal, skin it, dismember it. Be a human being, so to speak. Not be some type of ravenous animal in the way you approach food. The Gemara continues, Kedisanya, and Rashi points out this concept of teaching us proper behavior and creating a proper impression in the eyes of others is something that Tanoim as well have been involved with. Not just Rami Bar Abba, who was an Amora, but even the Tanoim teach us Hilchos Derech Eretz. As Rashi says on the second line from the top, Shelo Yara Odem Atzma Labrios Kerav Son, a person should not appear to others as a ravenous creature. So too, what Rami Bar Abba is talking about, someone who is so rushed to eat before even skinning the animal, he appears to be overly ravenous. The Gemara continues, Lo yochal odom shum ubotzo me rosho elo me orlov. A person, when he eats, shum is often translated as garlic, and botzol is often translated as onion, so he shouldn't eat it from the rosho, literally, Rosho is the head, but Elo Me'olov, from the side of it where its leaves grow, from its top. Vim Ochal Harei Zeh Ravson, if one doesn't eat from that side of it, he appears ravenous. Kayotze Bo Lo Yishta Odom Koisu Basachas, similar person should not lug his cup of drink in one shot, but rather sip it a little slower than that. We'll see later how much slower. V'him shosef, he lugs it down in one shot, hareza gargaron. That's the equivalent of ravson. Notice the word ravson, if you look at the phonetic appearance of that word, you can see hidden in that word ravenous as well. Gargaron would be the same thing with regard to drinking. Tanu Rabbanan, we have another Tanaic source concerning drinking. Hashesu Kais Basachas Areze Gargaron. One who drinks his cup in one shot, he appears as a gargaron. Shnayim Derechertz. In two shots, two gulps, that is proper behavior. Shloisha, sipping too slowly, three lugs, that's migase ruch, that looks haughty. Of course, one has to factor in here what is the size of the kos. That is not spelled out here. Let's just assume that the Gemara was dealing with a standard kos, a standard cup in the Gemara's times, not necessarily one of these beer mugs that holds a half gallon of beer. I don't think it's possible to lug that in one shot. But there are those who are quite talented in that area as well. The Omar Rami Bar Abba. Chatsuva. Chatsuva is a type of plant. Rashi describes it as a grass whose roots grow straight down. They don't spread from side to side. And this has value. Chatsuva mikatea raglehon tirishiaya. He makes several points that we've numbered them off. You can see 1 through 3. The first point, first we can translate, but the translation will not be of help until we learn Rashi with it. The chatsuva mikatea cuts off the legs of the wicked. Rashi. Chatsuva mikatea raglein de rishaya, esef shoshev noikvin, v'yordin beli mekveimis bashit, litzdodim klal. As we pointed out, this is a type of grass whose roots grow straight down and don't spread to the sides. The noitenoisei ben gvulei sodois. They are planted along the borders of fields. Each owner of his field has this growing on its borders. Ubotichem Yeshua Yisrael Esoretz. And Joshua, upon conquest of the land of Israel, he divided out the borders using this. Mekatei ragle orishoyim liyom adin shegoysim v'choymsin u'masigin vul v'ein l'meida mimenu. What this plant enabled owners to do, or to prove, is that if someone encroached on your property and tried to, let's say, move the fence further in, further onto his fence, further in onto your property, and you contested that, even if he cut the grass at surface level, you would be able to dig under the surface and reveal the grass that was planted with its root systems growing straight down, showing the actual original border. And that grass, Rashi explains in Mekatei Raglei Yerushaya, it cuts down their feet. They don't learn from the grass that shows the actual borders, and they try to encroach on your borders, and eventually they'll be caught. Netiyah, we continue in the Gemara. Netiyah mekatea raglein de katzvaya udeboyale nidos. Netiyah is a sapling. It's a reference to a halacha that we call orla, namely that fruit trees during their first 3 years, their fruit is forbidden. You cannot benefit from orla. Orla is, again, fruit during the first 3 years. The din of orla teaches us to behave in a halting, non-rushed fashion. And this is counter to the behavior of certain butchers who will slaughter meat and eat before half shifting the oath. They do things too rapidly. They're seeking out the meat before they dismember it and discover a possible problem, trefus. Likewise, and those are the katzvaya, those are the butchers we just mentioned, and mekatea ragleon, it cuts down the feet of the butchers. It means it, this halacha reproves them. Baal enidos, these are men that are married to their wives, and they cannot wait for their wives to achieve purification after their period of nidus. After the woman's monthly cycle, she has to wait a period of time and then immerse herself in the mikveh in order to become allowed. But he can't wait. Orla comes to tell us, comes to teach us a lesson. You have to wait. Tur Musa, the three halacha, mekatea ragleon desonein shel Yisrael. This is a point that takes a number of lines of the Gemara to develop, and that's why we have a long point here. The turmus is a type of vegetation, a type of fruit, it's a type of bean that needs extensive cooking. In fact, it's a bean that if you don't cook it enough times, it's actually bitter. After you cook it seven times, after seven cookings, it then becomes sweet and is actually served as a dessert, as Rashi says. So the turmus has a lesson. Seven times after you cook it, it then becomes sweet. What's the connection to the lesson this comes to teach us? So we go on in the Gemara. We say that the turmusa mekatea ragleon de sonein shisrael. So there's a euphemism here. Sonein shisrael means the enemies of Israel. It means Jews that went wayward, that sought idolatry as their belief system. So the turmus brings them to task. And how is that? Shinema. First we have a pasuk. Vayosifu b'nei Yisrael. This is a long pasuk. It takes a number of lines. The pasuk describes the Jewish people in the time of the Shoftim, the book of Judges, seeking out all kinds of idols and thereby abandoning the Almighty. And they went from one form of idolatry to another, at each time, obviously, not receiving their desired salvation, and all along leaving the Almighty aside. The pasuk says, "Vayosifu bnei Yisrael la'asos hara b'nei Hashem," and the Jews continued practicing evil ways in the eyes of the Almighty. "Ve'avdu es," and now there's a list of names of idols. Seven idols are referred to, and this is the connection to the turmus, the seven cookings. And it says, "Ve'avdu es ha'be'olim ves ashtarois ves elohei arom ves elohei tzidon ves elohei moav ves elohei bnei amoin ves elohei plishtim." All these different idols that these different nations worshipped. You have the Baalim, the Baal, a well-known idol from the Torah, and the Ashtaroth, another kind of idol, and the gods of Aram, and Sidon, and Moab, and Bnei Amon, and the Plishtim. Vayaz was Hashem v'lo avduhu. The end of this pasuk says they abandoned the Almighty and they did not serve Him. There seems to be a redundancy here. Mimashma shenemar vayazvus Hashem eini yodea shelo avdu. From that which it says, and they abandoned Hashem, do I not realize that they did not serve Him? Uma talmud lomar v'lo avdu. What does the pasuk teach us when it says, and they did not serve Him, after telling me they abandoned Him? Amar v'lozer amar kodesh baruch hu. Rabbi Elazar says that thusly the Almighty says, "Afilu keturmus hazeh," even like this turmus vegetation, which is bitter until it's cooked seven times, That it's cooked 7 times, and after which it's eaten as a dessert. It's sweet. But even as the Tormos, lo asauni bonai, my children, don't treat me even as the Tormos. In other words, the Jewish people, after worshipping 7 different types of idols, they still did not come back to me. The Tormos, at least, after you cook it 7 times, people then are attracted to it. But my people did not treat me even as the Tormos. They didn't come back to me. Tana Mishmei the Rabbi Meir, Mipnema Nitno Torah Yisrael. Why was the Torah given to the Jewish people? Mipnei Shehein Arzin. They are tough. And the Torah was given to them so as to make them softer. Let's take a look at Rashi. A couple of points in the Rashi. Mikatei Ragleim Disoni Yisrael. We're looking at Rashi a few lines up from here. The Tormos cuts off the legs of the wayward Jews. Diktsivi Shivavoy Dezora Bahai Kro. In the pasuk that we read, we saw 7 forms of idolatry. Lebusof. And at the end of the 7 forms of idolatry, Vayazvu Es Hashem. And it went on to say Velo Avdu. HaTormos Hazeh L'achar Shetriach Es Bailov Sheva Pomim. The Tormos, after it troubles the owner to cook it 7 times, Hu Choser L'Mutov, it becomes good. V'hein Etrichu Es Boron L'Hovi Aleim Puronius U'L'Achiso B'Shivas Eile V'lo Choser Bohen. And as opposed to the Jewish people who worship these idols, and each time different types of troubles were brought upon them, and it didn't wake them up, and it enraged the Almighty, and still they didn't turn back. They didn't return to the Almighty. My velo avdu loshon kabbalah. Kabbalah is an expression of complaint. Shu kovel aleihem, that he complains regarding them. Hakdichuni vaknituni sheva pomim kibishul atumus. They burnt me and they irritated me 7 times, like the cooking of the Tormos. V'achri kol zos lo nechshavti b'neim, and still I wasn't significant in their eyes. Now, a description of the Jewish people as Shein Azin. Rashi says, V'nitno lohem Torah shi'asku bo. The Torah was given specifically to the Jewish people to be engaged in it. V'hi mateshes koichum u'machnas libom. It weakens their boldness and causes a little bit of humility. The Gemara continues, Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel. A Tanaic source from the Yeshiva Rabbi Shmuel teaches Mimino Eishdos Lomoi. This pasuk is found at the end of the Chumash in Sefer Dvarim. The pasuk describes the giving of the Torah from the right hand of the Almighty, Eish Dos Lomo. Omar HaKodesh Baruch Hu, Ru'uyim Halolu, Shetinosein Lohem Dos Eish. These people are fit to have a belief system of fire. Now, Rashi explains, Mimino Eish Dos Lomo, Rashi says, Mimino, from the right hand of the Almighty, Nosan lohem ha-Torah mipnei she'esh dos lomo. A number of words are missing from the pasuk, but they are understood. The harbi mikros chasim, because there are many psukim that are like this. So even though the pasuk says mimino esh dos lomo, after you read mimino, Rashi fills in he fills in 4 words. Nosan lohem ha-Torah mipnei. Because he gave from his right hand, he gave them the Torah. Because she'esh dos lamo, because their way is the way of fire. We continue in the Gemara. Ikon diamri doseim shel elu esh. Their way is the way of fire. In other words, they are tough like fire. Shilmole Nitno Torah Yisrael, if the Torah would not have been given to the Jewish people, Ein Kol Uma V'Loshon Yecholim La'amod B'fneim, no nation would be able to stand up against them or stand up in front of them. They would have been a nation of people that would have been that one could not defeat. V'hainu D'Omer Reb Shimon ben Lokish Gimel Azin Heim. Reb Shimon ben Lokish Reish Lokish teaches there are three that are hard to defeat. Yisrael B'Umos, the Jews amongst the nations. This might sound peculiar, but history proves that the Jewish people have the longest staying power under all types of threats, pogroms, annihilation attempts, etc. There might be other ancient nations of the world, but certainly have not been chased from one corner of the world to the next under the threat of annihilation. Only the Jewish people have stood the test of time. So they truly are Az, very tough nation. Rashi says, Azim Koshim Li Notzer, very difficult to defeat. Number two, Kelev B'chayos, dogs amongst animals, and Tarnugol B'oifos, chickens amongst birds. V'yeshomrim Af Eiz B'beim Odaka, some say the goat amongst the small cattle, and V'yeshomrim Af Tzlaf B'ilonos, the Tzlaf plant with regard to trees. All of these are a list of tough ones. We continue in the Gemara. Shachta basada lo yevieno b'moit. We saw in the Mishnah that if an animal is slaughtered on Yom Tov in the field, one should not bring in the carcass on poles. Tana Rabbanan, ein hasuma yoytze b'maklo. Now here we're going to translate, but further explanation is necessary that we cannot provide at this point in time. The translation is, a blind man shall not go out on Yom Tov with his stick. The Rashi says, Davi derech choil v'iko zilus of Yom Tov. The stick referred to here creates an impression of something that's weekday-like and is considered, as a result, disparaging to the honor of Yom Tov. Exactly what the purpose of the stick is and what it is, as we say, that needs more explanation than we are providing. We simply translated the Gemara. Continuing in the same vein of not to create a weekday impression concerning Yom Tov, Aloha Rav Tarmilo, the shepherd should not go out on Yom Tov with his Tarmilo, his backpack. V'ein Yoytzin B'Kise. Kise is literally a chair, but think of it in terms of a sedan chair, a method of people transport. V'ein yoytzin b'kise, echod ho'ish ve'echod ho'isha, whether be for a man or a woman. The Gemara continues, and here on the side, before we continue in the Gemara, we have a Noseya topic heading, Tsuros halicha shem derech chol b'makel noisim al kise, different forms of walking or of transport that look like that reflect a weekday atmosphere. And here we're going to discuss the issue of the sedan chair, or the chair carried that one sits in and is carried by others. The Gemara asks, Aini, is the restriction taught in this source really so? The question lasts a few lines. V'ha shalach Rav Yankiv bar Idi. Rav Yankiv sent the following teaching. Zokein echad hoya b'shkuno senu, v'ya yoytze begaludki shelo. It was an old person in our neighborhood, and he used to be carried in his galutki. This is the chair type arrangement we described. Ubova shalo es Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi v'yomar, and the question was put to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and he said, like, is this okay? And he said, im rabim tzrichim lamuter, if the public needs his services, then he can be carried that way on Yom Tov. V'samchu rabbeinu al divrei Achi Shakya. The rabbis relied on the words of Achi Shakya, the Omar, who said, who testified, Hano afikte l'Rav Huna, mihini l'shili u'mishili lihini. Rav Huna, according to Achi Shakya, Achi Shakya says, I carried Rav Huna from these two places, one back and forth, from Hini to Shili and from Shili to Hini. They were two communities that were within the tum of one another. And I did this on Yom Tov. V'yomer Rav Nachman Yitzchok, Ano afikte l'mor Shmuel. And Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, I carried Mar Shmuel, mishimsho l'tulo, mitulo l'shimsho, from the sun into the shade, and from the shade into the sun. So what do we see from this? We see, contrary to what the source was telling, that there's Ein Yoitzin Bekisei, here we see great people were Yoitzin Bekisei, and they certainly wouldn't behave against the source. The Gemara answers, there's no question, Hosam Kedomar Taimo. There, as the reason that was stated, was the permission. What was the reason stated? So the source was talking about your standard individual. He wasn't needed by the public. But if you're dealing with someone that's needed by the public, so then they can be carried in the, we'll call this, chair fashion. Amar Rav Nachman, Le Chamo Bar Ado Shliach Tzion. Rav Nachman says to Chamo Bar Ado, who frequented Eretz Yisrael, he was a regular and traveling to Jerusalem. Kisalkis Lahasam. So Rav Nachman said to this gentleman, Chamo, when you go on your way to Eretz Yisrael, Akif, go a bit out of your way, Vazil Asuma de Tzur, and go up the heights of Tzur, Vazil Agabi de Rav Yankiv Bar Idi, and go to him, Uboi Mine, and ask of him, Kise Ma Atun Bei. What is your ruling? What is your practice with regard to the Kise, with regard to carrying people on chairs? Ada Ozal Lahasam, by the time Chamo Bar Ada got there, Noch Nafshi Rav Yankiv Bar Idi, Rav Yankiv passed away. Kisolik, when he got to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechei L'Rabbi Zrika. So Rav Chamo Bar Ada met Rabbi Zrika, Omar Lehi, he asked him, Kisei Matun Bei, what is your practice with regard to the Kisei? Omar Lehi, Hochi Omar Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Ami teaches, Ubavad Shelo Yikasef. The chair is allowed, provided they don't do it in the Mekasef fashion. What is the Mekasef fashion? This is a case where two people, they put their arms on each other's shoulders, and the chair is placed on the two people's extended arms, and they carry them that way with the chair on their arms. Again, their arms, each one's arms are on the other one's shoulders, and they carry them that way. That, Rashi says, on the second line under the Gemara text, the Mischazi Derechol Farhesil Olich Lamokam Rochok Tfei Mishenosim Bein Yedem Bekiso. That gives the impression that he's being carried to a distant location, which is something characteristic of what one would do during the weekday, as opposed to the proper way on Yom Tov. Hence, the proper way would be, you have to imagine a chair with poles that extend from it, and people would hold the poles, or hold the chair even, maybe without poles, but hold the chair in their hands, as opposed to the chair being placed upon their extended arms. So that's the what Rav Ami is teaching, Uvad Shelo Yikasef. Yikasef is they shouldn't do the shoulder approach. Mai Uvad Shelo Yikasef, what do you mean by that? Omar Rav Nach, Omar Rav Yosef Brei, the Rava be Alunki. He's saying the Alunki method. And we explain that already. We explain that that's the extended arms onto your friend's shoulders and the chair being placed upon the extended arms. Aini, the Gemara asks, is that so? Is that really prohibited? Ha Rav Nachman shara lo liyalta lemepak alunki, or bealunki. Rav Nachman allowed Yalta was his wife, to be carried that way. Someone says, Shiny Yalta de Be'isa. Yalta is a different case, that any other way would have caused her fear of falling. So because she was fear-struck, even Alunki would be allowed. Amemaru Marzutra Mekasvi Luhu Beshabato de Rigla Mishum Biatusa. Amemar and Marzutra were carried in the Mekasvi fashion because of Biatusa. That's one version. The Amrilo Mishum Duchaka de Tzibura. Two explanations as to, two versions as to why they allowed themselves to be carried in the Mekasvi fashion that otherwise would not be allowed. And what are the two explanations? So the first one was Biatusa. They were afraid of falling, if not for the more secure Mekasvi fashion. And we should point out, when they were being carried on Shabbos of the Yontif, which is the time that they would lecture, and they were being carried in the Beis Medrash till their place, to their lectern, or to where they would sit in the Beis Medrash. The other pshat given in the Gemara was Mishum Duchaka de Tzibura. So Rashi explains three lines from the bottom: Mishum Duchaka she'oimdim al raglayim v'torach tziburu. The tzibur, the assembly there, the people assembled would stand up for these rabbis. So as to reduce the amount of time that the people would be troubled to stand in their honor, they would be rushed to their place in the Beis Medrash, and that was most effectively accomplished through the Mekasvi method. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.